And I'm going to start with Sid is the first one I met. And I'm impressed by Sid's mixed background. Her father was African-American, Ukrainian-American. We have a Ukrainian friend here. Ukrainian-American and Native American. While her mother was Bajan-Canadian. And her story is about the going back in, further back into her family, to her grandparents and great-grandparents, take you back to the slave days in Virginia and Kentucky, and finally after the American Civil War, coming up to Chicago. And then in 1913, they decided that they would like to come to Toronto, where they believed they would find more opportunities and a tolerance for interracial marriages. Sid is going to tell us a little bit about her family.
Wow, good job, Nancy. I don't have to say anything else now. It's all said. Well, it's a mixed bag, I'll admit, and it's quite a story. It's a pioneering story. It was a story of trailblazers that paved the way for other cultures and other black people, actually, coming from all kinds of different places and countries, specifically U.S., United States, and the Caribbean. So I know that you were talking. How long do I have, Nancy? I don't know. Okay, whatever. Okay. All right, I'll start with this. My name is Cynthia Sid Redmond. Cynthia Marguerite Redmond, and people call me Sid. I'm very much like my mother's side. And my name is taken, my mother's middle name is Cynthia, and her sister's name is Marguerite. And I'm very much like the Bajan side of my family. I don't look like the Redmonds, really. I look a lot like the Parises from Barbados. I'll tell you, my mother, I'm the daughter of John Arthur Redmond and Ruby Cynthia Paris Redmond. My father was mixed African-American, Ukrainian-American, Native American heritage. And John, my dad, was born in October 1921 in Toronto. My mother, Ruby, was born April 1916 in Sydney, Nova Scotia, to Bajan-Canadian parents who came up on the steamship from Barbados in 1908. So Ruby's parents and grandparents emigrated to Nova Scotia from Barbados, as I mentioned, in 1908, and settled in Sydney, where my mother was born in 1916, and relocated in 1918 to Montreal. My Bajan-Canadian heritage is a mix of French, Irish, and there's black in there, and the extinct Arawak Indians from the Spice Islands. You get it? You know, the Caribs. Yep. Ruby's father, Edward Paris, who was right proper, was an extremely polished and talented self-taught chef whose light complexion worked in his favor, affording him a lucrative 40-year career from the 1920s through the 50s as executive chef on the private cars of Canadian National Railways, CNR as it was called back then, which at the time was headquartered in Montreal. So living in Montreal, he was self-taught, and he managed to get in position and work his way into becoming an executive chef there. During those years and up until 1965, CNR was a crown corporation. So that being said, my grandfather's culinary skills were, through those years, exclusive to the Governor General of Canada, other high-level government officials, and private corporate clients as well. That's who he cooked for. Grandpa Paris was a widower and raised my mother and her sisters in a very comfortable middle-class household in Saint-Henri, a neighborhood in southwestern Montreal, in the borough of Le Sud-Oui. While my grandpa Paris made notable progress racially in Montreal, my story leans toward the early pioneer years of my grandparents, Nathaniel, Nate Redman, and his wife Goldie Mae Bishop Redman, the American side. In 1913, as Nancy mentioned, Goldie Mae's father, Jesse Bishop, was a freed slave of half black, half white American heritage. Now, my grandmother being part Ukrainian, it was traced down in the DNA, but my great-grandfather was born to a slave owner in 1824 in Litchfield, Kentucky. And he was, of course, the son to a black slave woman, and his father being a planter and owner of a plantation. I believe it was a tobacco plantation, and he grew up as a slave. He was not a free man. But at the same time, he was handsome. He was lighter skinned because of the mix, and his hair was smooth, and that there was a thing in those days, and they said it in Toronto, you either pass or you don't. So this gave my great-grandfather, you know, Bishop, the planter, a bit of pride there in his son. So he secretly educated him. You weren't allowed to educate slaves. They weren't allowed to read and write. They weren't allowed to do figuring or numbers or math or anything like that, as we know. So he was secretly educated in his numbers and reading, writing, and basically knowing how to do business. And he was the pride to him. Now, you know, I've read a lot about plantation life, especially what white plantation women went through. It wasn't all a ball of wax for them. It was a hard life. You know, they don't come out looking like Gone with the Wind, I'll tell you that right now. Life was tough for them. You know, they'd be out there scrubbing and as much as the slaves half the time, unless they're very, very wealthy. They made their own candles. They handled making all the clothes for the slaves and all the soap and, you know, and they cured the ham and they slaughtered the pigs, and they just did a lot of work. That being said, there would be bitterness too if the planter was sleeping with the slave women or one of the slave women. It would be really bitter if there was a love there that the planter felt for the slave woman, which was, I think, the case in my family. So she was not very welcoming of my great-grandfather being part of that household. So when my great-great-granddaddy died, so did my great-grandfather's protection. So once he passed, my great-granddaddy, Jesse Bishop, was sold from the Kentucky plantation to a Georgian plantation. He was sent off. He had a wife. He had children. He had a family. He had to leave them all. So he had to leave all that life behind, and he was moved off to this Georgian plantation somewhere in Georgia. At some point later, I don't know how he was treated. I don't know. We haven't traced that. I can tell you I have relatives that have whip marks all over their backs. But he escaped the plantation in Georgia, and he made it back to Litchfield, the Bishop plantation in Litchfield, and he asked to be taken back in. So, you know, this was before the war. This had been the 1840s or so, 1850s or so, in around there, before the war. And he asked, you know, my great-great-granddaddy's wife, please take me back. She took him back. I don't know what kind of work he did. He was a gentleman. He was raised a gentleman by his father. He did not go back to his wife. She took up with another man, thinking that she would never see him again. So she had a new husband sort of thing, a new man. So he did not disrupt that life that she had built for herself. After the Civil War broke out, he went north. Well, how many slaves went north after they were freed? What were they going to do? So what he had was a valuable commodity. And that valuable commodity was education, knowledge. Knowledge is truly power, no matter what color you are. So he made his way to Chicago in after the Civil War in 1865, 1866, after the Civil War. He met my great-grandmother. My great-grandmother's family was from a plantation in Virginia. There was a mix there, and they married. Now, in the meantime, my grandpa, Nathan Redman, was born in a sharecropper's son in Columbia, I think it's Columbus, Missouri. It was Missouri for sure. And that's the job you got when you're black. You're a sharecropper. You know, you're agriculturalist. You're a farmer, a sharecropper. When he was 16, around 16, they moved to Chicago. And there, he wasn't educated. My grandfather really never did know how to write or read properly. But that didn't stop him. There's a thing called will. He was dark-skinned, but he was Native descent. He was Black American. He had God knows what else in him there. And I remember a story. My cousin Bernice Carnegie used to tell us about this, and my uncle Freeman Redman would tell us about this, that when Grandpa would walk out the door in Chicago, leaving in the morning to do whatever he's going to do or go to work or whatever, wasn't to go to school, he knew he was going to have to fight that day. And he would not walk out that door without carrying rocks in his hands. So every day he walked out that door in his home in Chicago, he had rocks in his hands because he knew he was going to have to fight to survive. And sure enough, he did, and he'd win. And he was fighting white men, not black men, white men. And as it turns out, we've got an early picture of him. I'm sorry I don't have my pictures here, but he was a Golden Kids Glove boxer in his day. He was born in 1886, so you can imagine in the 1890s, he was, you know, a kid gloves boxer. And when he was, you know, just a little older than 16, the job he could get was driving a cab. He drove a cab. So the jobs that he had there in Chicago was a cleanup boy, elevator boy, cab driver. He met my grandmother, who was a quarter black, because her father was half black. And she was part, and her mother was whiter and Ukrainian. So they had a mixed marriage. In the South, you could not, the interracial marriage was against the law. You could not do that. In Chicago, they did. They did get married. It looked like an interracial marriage. It didn't matter that she was a quarter black. She was blonde and fair. That's what they saw. They saw this colored man with this white woman. Didn't go over well. Grandpa managed to get a job as a porter for CN Railroad, CNR. It was actually back in that day. It was called Grand Trunk Railroad before it was CN. So it was Grand Trunk Railroad, which ran out of Chicago and some other northwestern states in the U.S. and across Canada as well. CNR was a very large, Grand Trunk Railroad was a very large railroad. And he would come back and forth to Toronto on his trips as a porter. And he said, Goldie, you know what? Toronto looks a lot like Chicago. I think we need to move north. We need to emigrate north. So they up and emigrated north to Toronto. He still worked as a porter for CN. And they settled in a house. I have a picture of that, but not with me. Not a house, an apartment. They managed to get an apartment. They paid more money because they're colored than white people paid for their apartment in the same building. But this was on Grange Avenue, you know, where Grange is. And then they moved over to Shaw.